The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Money FM 89.3, the best of Saturday mornings. Wide World on Money FM 89.3.
Let's just bring them on right now, get to it. Jennifer Walker, a U.S. climate scientist, she discovered the exact timing at which sea level started to accelerate due to human activity. What have you done lately, Neil?
Oh, no, it's brilliant. But it's humbling and it's inspirational.
Jennifer, welcome to the show. You're joining us from the U.S. How are you today?
Great. Thank you so much.
Great to have you with us. In the studio, we have Cheryl Tay, who is a Singapore scientist who calculated the rates at which the 50 largest cities in the world are sinking. Wow, that's pretty amazing. Cheryl, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me here.
Great to have you with us. And Fangyi Tan is also a Singapore scientist, a PhD candidate, the first Singaporean to set foot in Antarctica as a scientist. She discovered the first corals in Singapore that can estimate sea levels thousands of years ago. Fangyi, welcome to you.
Hey, thank you for having me on the show.
Well, I'd like to thank all three of you for making me feel spectacularly useless.
And even more so than usual.
And inadequate, but deeply humbling and deeply, deeply inspiring.
Oh, it is. This is just going to just an amazing segment for a lot of reasons. Jennifer, since you're the farthest away from us physically, let's start with you. You're an assistant research professor in the Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences at Rutgers University. You also do some work at Bryn Mawr College as well. Tell us a little bit about, first of all, your relationship with Singapore and the scientists here, the Earth Observatory of Singapore. How do you fit into the big picture here?
Yeah, I've had ongoing collaborations with colleagues in Singapore, kind of first since my PhD advisor, who's Professor Ben Horton, moved from the U.S. to Singapore. So that was during my grad school experience, and I've had these ongoing really productive collaborations with all of these scientists at the Earth Observatory in Singapore.
And as the work that you're working on now, as I mentioned a bit earlier, you're working on the rate, the exact timing which sea level is starting to accelerate, the rise in sea level. Tell us a little bit more about just kind of an overview of your work.
Yeah, so it's thinking about how climate and sea level are related. And a lot of that is looking further back in time. So working to reconstruct sea level changes on these longer time scales over the past few thousands of years. So I do a lot of work in different coastal environments like salt marshes. So it's using these individual sea level reconstructions to think about processes driving change, and then also compiling data from all around the world, you know, from colleagues from Singapore and Europe and across the North Atlantic and, you know, throughout Asia, and compiling all of that data and bringing it together. We're then using this global database of all of these records. That's how I was able to come up with this timing of emergence of modern rates of rise, by putting all of this data from all of these wonderful scientists together and thinking about globally, you know, what is happening with sea level change and when did that acceleration really begin?
Yeah, we're going to bring in Cheryl Tay and Fangyi Tan in just a moment here in the studio. But Jennifer, just briefly, one last question to you. So what is your top line? What are you finding? What have your findings been? I'm sure it's a very complicated and long story, but can you give us a top line? Because, you know, there many people say, oh, well, sea levels have always been changing and it's happened many times throughout history, et cetera. It's, you know, and they point that out. But what are your findings when it comes to these sea level rise changes?
Yeah, it's really what stands out, especially when you're looking at these longer timescales of these records, is the rapid acceleration in the rates of rise. So that we know now that the last century of sea level rise is the fastest rate that we've seen in at least the last 2,000 years. And when you use this geologic data over these longer timescales, that's what really, really stands out, right? Is this global change. You have your global average sea level rise, and then the next piece of that story, right, is thinking about those kind of smaller spatial scales at regional and local levels to think about adaptations for the future, you know, because we're seeing this global acceleration and then getting at the individual driving processes at specific locations.
Fantastic. Cheryl, let's bring you in now. Cheryl Tay, you are a PhD student at NTU, and you've been calculating the rate at which 50 largest cities in the world are sinking. Is that correct?
Yeah.
For the benefit of our listeners, similar to what we said to Jennifer, can you give us a broad overview? Firstly, how you got into this field of study and what you're discovering?
Right. So my work is mainly using INSAR satellite imagery to study how land moves on the Earth. So how I got into it is, well, I was really amazed when I first saw these beautiful images of the Earth. Like, there is so much information in it, and there's so much you can do with it. So that's how I got into this PhD, looking into land motions and how it affects sea level in our world.
And what is the human impact of these sinking cities that you're discovering?
Well, very often when we think about sea level, we think about rising sea waters. But it's a two-sided coin where you have both the land going down and the sea waters going up at the same time. Mm. But the land aspect is something that we've not looked into very much detail. And that's becoming an issue, more concerning issue nowadays, because we start to see these very rapid rates of land subsidence that are happening in many coastal cities in the world. And the cause of this is actually pretty common. It's groundwater extraction, water resource, which every city needs. You need water for commercial, for residential and everything. So you have to keep extracting groundwater from the ground. And that's, well, the only way we can go about this is to regulate how we use the water.
Mm. Is Singapore one of your 50 cities?
Yeah.
And what are you finding in Singapore?
Well, Singapore is largely what the scientific community knows. It's relatively stable. We don't have issues coming from groundwater extraction, which causes the land to sink. And Singapore, while we see a few sinking spots, and these are also within our expectations, there are areas where there is land reclamation happening in Singapore.
Yeah, wow. And Fang Yi Tan, you're also a PhD candidate in Singapore, the first Singaporean scientist to set foot on Antarctica when you went recently with Ben Horton and your group from the Earth Observatory Singapore. Tell us about your sea level estimations 1,000 years ago or thousands of years ago. How are we changing here in Singapore based on that?
I think a lot of the work that I do in Singapore is using the corals, dead corals that we find in Sentosa that go the past 3,000 years to present. And then they track that sea levels were gradually falling, maybe by half a meter over the past few thousand years. But this is significant because we realize that that falls at really the lower limit of what the models are suggesting sea levels have been doing over the past thousands of years.
Explain that. What does that mean?
So actually, the bulk of my thesis is trying to get data from places near to the equator, or like tropical regions, which are far away from where the ice sheets were in the past. Mm-hmm. And that's because when the ice sheets melt, a lot of the water actually flows towards tropical regions. And so these areas are the ones that are most sensitive to ice sheet behaviors in the past. And the reason why we care about this is because going forward, up to 2050, the projections of sea level are quite similar, regardless of the different types of emission scenarios. But then when you go into the longer term, beyond 2100, the different emission scenarios really begin to diverge. And on top of that, one of the largest uncertainties in future sea levels has to do with like what the ice sheets will do in the future. Mm. Because we are still not very clear about how ice sheets can behave and how they have behaved in the past. And so trying to study how sea levels have changed in the past to past ice sheet behaviors will inform us greatly about what happens in the future.
Mm. In layman's terms, what do you see on these corals that shows you the change in sea levels?
So how we try and understand sea levels from corals is that we know today we can observe these corals growing in specific depths, like in shallow water, so that at low tides they get exposed above the water, right. And then when they're exposed during the extreme low tides for long enough periods, then they die to a uniform level. And so by looking for the equivalent structures in the fossil corals and then assuming that this relationship between the corals and sea level hasn't changed through time, then we can use the difference between the fossil coral height and the living corals today to estimate how much sea levels have changed.
Wow. Yeah. There is so much to discuss and unpack with this. Let me just go ahead and reintroduce our guests, those of you that have just joined us. Jennifer Walker, climate change scientist, the Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences at Rutgers University, joining us from the U.S. Cheryl Tay, a Singaporean climate scientist and a second-year student at the Asian School of the Environment at Nanyang Technological University. And last but certainly not least, Fangyi Tan, who is at the final year PhD student at the Earth Observatory, Singapore. Wow, that's
a
lot.
And the first Singaporean to set foot on Antarctica as a scientist.
As a climate and working very hard. We do want to recognize Professor Ben Horton of the Earth Observatory, Singapore, for putting us in touch with these wonderful ladies and getting us set up. Jennifer, let's go back to you in the U.S. and talk to us a little bit more about some of these processes driving sea level change. One of the arguments is, hey, this has been happening over time anyway. It's just cyclical. You have come out and said quite clearly that it's happening at a faster rate than it has before. Do we have the causation between the rising levels faster versus what they may have done in the past?
So, you know, it's clear today with accelerating sea level rise because of melting ice and warming ocean temperatures are really the drivers of this accelerated rates of change. So, yes, you know, sea level has fluctuated in the past and it has gone up and down due to various processes, including, you know, ice melt and changing ocean temperatures. But that's really what is causing this acceleration today from, you know, human-caused greenhouse gas emissions.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
And let's bring Cheryl back in. Now, you focus on land subsidence, you know, which you say is a lot of that is caused by groundwater extraction. How concerned should we be about it? What impact is it going to have on us within our cities?
Well, land subsidence has been a really known problem for a long time, but what we do not know is actually to what extent and exactly where we should be concerned about. And that's why what we're trying to do is to use very high-resolution images from INSAR. They actually use microwaves, which is something you might find in your kitchen, but of course not at harmful levels. They do not harm humans. So we're using this very high-resolution data from microwaves to image this and understand exactly where groundwater is a concern, any specific aquifers we have to watch out for. And this will be very important to communicate with to policy makers so that they can streamline their resources better and come up with more target measures.
You mentioned Singapore, a lot of science involved. They're monitoring the groundwater usage. What are some of the most vulnerable cities? I know you're looking at 50 different cities. What are some of the real red flag cities that we should be concerned about?
Well, we see a lot of growing cities in Southeast Asia, for example, Jakarta. There are also places in Asia, Chittagong, which we see very alarming rates. But this has been known, and what we need to do now is really map these with very high resolution and monitor these closely enough so that we know how to continue working with these rates and how we can go about to reduce the gravity of the problem.
Yeah. Fangyi, as you're looking at studying the fossils, the corals, the mangrove deposits in Singapore and elsewhere, you know, along the equator, has there been anything that's been actually very surprising to you? Has anything really, any particular individual discovery or when you were in the Antarctic studying down there, anything that said, wow, this is amazing. This is something I did not expect.
I think finding corals in Singapore, for one, was something I didn't expect, given how much we've changed our coastlines, how much we've reclaimed the land. And so I didn't expect to find anything that was preserved thousands of years ago to present. And actually, in other sites in Singapore, we have found corals that I think so far are 7,000 years old.
Hmm.
So it's quite amazing that we still have these preserved, even though we've changed our coastline so much. So that was one thing that really came out of COVID, actually, because we were planning to do field work like maybe in Malaysia and Indonesia, but because of COVID and the lockdown, we were stuck in Singapore.
Oh,
and then the silver lining of that was we managed to find all these corals locally, which, of course, is important because then it informs local understanding of sea level changes.
Yeah. We know that, about 25% of Singapore's current landmass has been added since, the 60s or so. Is there any challenge, other than trying to find those original corals, to your work as climate scientist trying to figure out what the sea level rise might look like on Singapore? Mm-hmm. Now that we've done so much reclamation, does it change the way that looks from your perspective and the subsidence that Cheryl was talking about?
I think this is one question that we're actively trying to figure out. So because a lot of the corals are concentrated on the southern part of Singapore and the southern islands, where you still have, you know, little islands offshore.
Like Lazarus and St. John's.
Yeah, like Lazarus and John's, that type of islands. Mm-hmm. But then we're trying to see whether spatially we see the same type of sea level signal, because then we can understand what sort of processes are acting to control sea level across Singapore.
Right.
Because there might be spatial differences.
Hmm.
And that's the challenge, because in the northern part of Singapore, we don't really find the hard corals that we need to do the same type of reconstructions. And so I have colleagues in our group who are actually looking at trying to reconstruct sea level using mangroves.
Yeah.
And so the big question is whether or not then these different types of sea level indicators are telling us the same story. And if not, then is there something else that's spatially causing spatial differences that we need to care about if we're trying to think about sea levels going forward?
Yeah, oh, wonderful.
How far are you from making actual recommendations to, let's say, the Singapore government about what they should be thinking about for 20, 30, 40 years? When Ben Horton was on last time, he was talking about if the rates of ice sheet melt in Antarctica continue, you know, we could see massive change in the next 100
Singapore
years.
Singapore will be particularly exposed because of where we are on the court and on the equator.
On the equator.
The waters from both ice caps meet in the middle, don't they? So we're really vulnerable.
Yeah. How, in terms of your research, right? How long would it be before you'd make recommendations, do you think?
We still have quite a ways to go.
Quite a way to go. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And I think that's why I'm not only doing research. I think it's a global effort. Like, a lot of sea level scientists are actively trying to, that's why we want to validate these ice models that, you know, try and model how sea level how sea level rises in different parts of the world when ice sheets melt. And a lot of effort is going into actually producing high-resolution data to actually validate these models before we can use those models to then project the future. Mm. And so my other project in my PhD is to try and reconstruct sea level change over the past 8,000 years using mangrove peat in the Caribbean, in Belize.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I think it's for the first time we've managed to construct a continuous record over the past 8,000 years. And so that's very exciting, because then we can really compare to the models in a single location, whereas previously we have the challenge of, like, if you have temporally sparse data, then you don't know whether the signal that you're seeing is spatially or, like, it's caused by temporal changes over time.
Wow. I mean, listening to the three of them, I'm caught in this paradox. On the one hand, it's very existential doom. But on the other hand, listening to you three scientists and the wonderful work that you're all doing gives me a little bit of hope, and I hope it does our listeners too. Mm. So my final question for all of you is, starting with Jennifer, what is the one thing that we can all do listening today, the one thing we can all start doing today that will make a positive difference? Let's start with Jennifer.
Yeah, I think it's continuing the discussion, you know, and having, been teaching the last few years now, I have a lot of hope seeing in younger generations how much more aware people are kind of the problem, and people are aware of the issue. And I think it's important to continue to have the conversations about what's happening around us, these extreme weather patterns and, the climate changes that we've seen in the past few generations, what that actually means, and continuing to talk about, what is really happening and how we're all connected. I'm here in the U.S. and you're all in Singapore. We're all experiencing these different effects of climate change, and continue to have these conversations.
Mm. Fang Yi, what about you? One thing that Singaporeans can start doing today, young and old?
I think just making choices and thinking about the carbon emissions that and the carbon footprint that you're having in your own. Like, for example, if you're eating, make a choice between, like, beef versus, like, red meat versus white meat, that type of choices, or maybe go vegetarian once a day, that type of stuff.
And what about you, Cheryl?
We use a lot of resources. So even like when you're just using your water, there are many issues that come with it. It's linked with groundwater and so on. So in every aspect of our life, we can think more about exactly what resources we're using and try to be more try to save more on what we are utilizing as well. So I think that's a simple step that we can take to try to tackle this together.
Fantastic. Ladies, thank you so much to our three climate scientists, Jennifer Walker, who is in the U.S. at Rutgers University, and Cheryl Tay here at NTU, and Fengyi Tan, who is at the Earth Observatory, Singapore. Thanks to all of you for being with us today. Please come back again and talk to us.
Thank you for having us here.
All right. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.